But I'm not trying to make people like me anymore. Like, I just think it's a zero-sum game. I don't think I'm ever going to make sense to people, Sarah. Like,
yeah, we're too much. That's what I have in my LinkedIn about section is, you know, I'm too much for some people and that's okay.
Totally.
Connecting the dots with the Renaissance people.
Hello, Renaissance people and folks who would like to cultivate a Renaissance mindset. It's Sarah Kobilka, the Renaissance woman, and today, once again, I'm excited about my guest. When am I not excited about my guest? I don't know. But this one is a really special one because Jenny Gritters is joining me, and she is someone who actually helped inspire this podcast and get it to become a reality. I'll let you know a little bit more about that in the show. Here's some other things we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about Jenny's many iterations. Like me, she has had that squiggly career path. We're going to talk about how she actually cultivated and created spaces of belonging so that she, as a multi-passionate, had that type of community for herself. We're both former journalists, and there is certainly an appeal to journalism for multi-passionates. We're going to talk about pattern recognition and systems thinking, how naming eras can actually help you explain your expanding identities, how freedom makes you magnetic. We're going to think about our career paths as a non-linear journey, and of course, think outside the box using imagination to find inspiration, and we'll discuss how trusting intuition helps you to get out of your own way. This is a great one. I'm so delighted to have Jenny join for this episode 10 of Connecting the Dots with the Renaissance People. Do you want to keep following everything that I'm doing in this space and other spaces? Visit my website, Ren Woman Consulting, that's Ren with one N, and sign up for my newsletter. I'll be giving you updates on everything happening with the podcast and more, because as a Renaissance woman, there's always more coming down the way. In the meantime, here we go.
Hello, Jenny Gritters. I'm so happy to have you here today, and I'm going to jump right in with my favorite first question, which has been intriguing for me. I'm going to do this whole analysis after I've had a bunch of guests, but I want to know for you. I sent you an email ahead of time of some terms that I've come up with that might align with your identity, with full permission to say none of the above, which is a fairly Renaissance person-y thing to do. So the options that I have are Renaissance person, multi-passionate, generalist, versatilist, Jack, Jill, Jay of all trades, boundary spanner, or what other identity might align with who you think of when you think of yourself as that really complex person?
I think multi-passionate is one that sticks for me. I also really resonate with the idea of being a constant expander.
Ooh.
Just like always changing my mind, always a different person every 3 months. But multi-passionate also really feels like it contains the multitude that I am.
Excellent. Now I ask you the question because you are also a writer and editor. I have been debating hyphen or no hyphen between multi and passionate.
Hyphen.
Okay. You're on team hyphen. I've gone back and forth on it. And okay, I will defer to you then. We'll put a hyphen in there.
Okay.
So multi-passionate, ever-changing Jenny Gritters, I am beyond excited to have you on my show. Regular listeners will know Jenny's name because it's come up in almost every single episode.
I'm so honored.
And so I was trying to think of, like, how do I describe your relationship with this podcast? And the initial thing that came to mind was you're almost like the fairy godmother of it, but that doesn't quite align with some of your new terminology. So I'm thinking that you'll be the fairy priestess.
Yes.
Of this podcast, if that works for you.
Yes.
Okay. And so just to give a little backstory for me and how I know of Jenny, I went into the pandemic with a small child as a former journalist who I just had a kid. I had a dog with seizures. And rather than starting sourdough, I just started my own business. And that was a scary time to start your own business, be a new mom, all these different things. And I think someone recommended her podcast to me. I listened to that podcast and there were a couple of hosts, but Jenny had that similar background to me. She was also a mom. She was dealing with a lot of things. I got the vibe of, hey, she's another person who has a lot of different interests. And so that was so helpful for me as I was starting off my business and feeling really lonely and trying to keep it all together. And then I've continued to follow Jenny through her many iterations. sessions and have been involved in her career coaching programs and bought her book, which is sitting by my bedstand, and everything like that. So I'm happy, delighted, thrilled to have you on the show. And I want to give you a chance. This is the place where you don't have to shy from the complexity. You don't have to niche down. You were the first person to tell me, Sarah, you're anti-niche. That's okay. So tell me a little bit about your complexity, Jenny.
Thank you. This is the nicest introduction. And Sarah, you really have been around, I would say, for, I mean, a huge chunk of my career. You're one of the OGs. And you've stuck around. Okay. I think because you're similarly multi-passionate, I've changed a lot over the past 6 years, and so have you. And so there are a handful of you who I feel like we have evolved together. We had children at the same time. We were like drowning in the pandemic at the same time. We were leaving our careers at the same time. So it's very much an honor to be here. And I feel like I've been with you for all the transitions that birthed this podcast too, like you said. So pretty damn magical. Okay. So when I think about my work, there's so many parts of what I do. So I am a mom. I have a 3.5-year-old and a 6-year-old. I'm a writer. And I also had a long career as a journalist. I still write a lot, but not for clients anymore. I just write for myself. I wrote a book last year. It's called The Sustainable Solopreneur, like you said. And I often say it's the reason I wrote it is because I stopped giving my words to my clients. And so I had a lot of words that then belonged to me again. And so I was able to write a book with them. I'm a coach and a mentor, a strategist. So I help people build businesses that are very unique sizes and shapes. That's the thing I'm most obsessed with, like helping to build things that don't exist presently, mostly because you and I both know our brains work very differently. I collect people whose brains work very differently. And so I'm very interested just from like a curiosity standpoint on how we build careers and relationships with work that make space for all of us. And then I'm also the founder of a company that I am currently building called World Builders, which is basically an ecosystem, a hub for people like us to come in and learn how to step into our wealth and our visibility and all these things that come back to the fact that we were told probably for most of our lives that our brains were not normal. And so it's a whole space of people like us who are very explosively creative, who change their minds a lot, who can't be summed up in one phrase, right? I always joke I change my bio on my social media profile like every 3 months. So those are some of the pieces of what I do. I also live in the woods, do a lot of yoga, you know, all those things. Yeah.
Yep. So Jenny really created this community space. Sustain was the big area that I was in. If you listen to a previous episode, I had another one of the members, Marika, from that community. And I was surprised by how many of us were fitness instructors.
Yeah. So interesting.
Or physical coaches. Like we coached people how to challenge their bodies. And then in our careers, we're like coaching people how to challenge their minds.
Well, I think it's because, Sarah, I always think about like my brain can't just do the one thing. Like I always tell people, calling myself even a business coach is a little hard for me because I see myself as helping to liberate you. And that doesn't just apply to one area of your life. And so I think that's why a lot of us are like, okay, I do this same thing in people's bodies and in their minds and in their workplaces. And then they're it like stretches all the way. And so it makes a lot of sense to me that most of us who were in there were also, we're like dabbling in all the different expressions of the thing we teach.
Yeah. In your career, obviously you found that beautiful community and sense of belonging and people really valued you for your complexity in the work that you're doing recently in the World Builders, as well as previously in the sustainable solopreneur era.
Yeah.
Prior to that, were there any spaces that you were working in where it was truly valued, that you were a dabbler in so many different things?
No. I mean, yeah, the honest answer to that is no. I was often told in jobs that I was too ambitious, that I, you know, needed to calm down, that I needed to stop proposing new projects, that I worked too fast. And so I knew, you know, I knew for a long time. I do think freelancing allowed me to express more parts of myself, which was a really helpful era. I could do lots of different kinds of projects. I could, you know, help lots of different kinds of clients. As same with you, I never did well with a niche. And so I remember actually when I got laid off from my job at Wirecutter, they said, well, you're just too much of a generalist. We don't really know where to put you because you do everything. And so, you know, was it valued? No. And so I think that's part of why, you know, it's interesting. I said today in a call with a group of people I'm leading, I didn't go out to be a community builder. Like that was never really my intention. I was a coach, I was a storyteller, but it was almost like it made a lot of sense to gather people who were having the same experience I was. And I think I was actually kind of early in that accidentally, right? Like during the pandemic, a lot of us started spending more time online and left our jobs. And there was just a void, I think. And so people naturally just kind of like grouped up around me. And so I would create spaces for it. The first time I really felt like I belonged, I think, was in those spaces, though. The Parents Who Freelance program, which I ran way at the beginning of the pandemic, was probably the first place where I was like, oh, there are people like me, you know? Maybe I don't need to fix myself. Maybe this is a superpower.
And I think I actually sent you an email and said, I would love to join this, but it didn't work in my schedule or something like that.
Yeah.
It was either that, or did you have another one that was for people who were just caregivers broadly or going through health problems?
Yes, it was called ADAPT. So it was people who were going through deep grief, chronic illness, or caretaking. And it was a huge program. I mean, I look back, I think we had 40 plus people, and some of them still meet now. That was like 4 or 5 years ago. They're having a retreat, some of them, in a couple of months. I think it's important to say it's never been like a business thing for me. It's been a belongingness thing. And so people have stayed friends. You know, it's really common that, yes, Sustain, the big program I ran, ended, but you all will stay in touch. That's how it's always worked. You know, it's special. But I think it was that I didn't have a place to belong either, right?
Yep.
Make it. Yeah.
I wonder if you are like me. So my very first degree was in broadcast journalism. And part of the appeal of journalism to me was, one, I don't like sitting at a desk all day long. I get to move around. Two, I get to meet a whole bunch of people. I get to learn and I get to share what I'm learning with other people. The idea of being like a more general assignment reporter was kind of appealing to me, because then I could tell a story about like a dog park opening one day and then a story about like a murder the next day, which I didn't like. But the variety, at least, that I thought was going to come from journalism was part of the appeal of getting into that field before I realized what it would really be like to work in that industry.
Yeah.
Did you have a similar?
Totally. So my undergrad degree, I had a minor in creative nonfiction, a minor in Italian, a major in psychology, and then I went and got a master's degree in journalism, but I was in like 4 different departments, right? So I took classes in the science journalism department, the magazine journalism department. For a while, I wanted to be a foreign reporter, but then realized that wouldn't really be great for my lifestyle if I wanted kids. And so it is true. I like got into journalism thinking that it would be a way to sort of scratch that curiosity itch, to meet a lot of people. It seemed like there were a lot of different ways that your career could go, right? Like I could change my mind. There's this joke that I only ever stay in jobs for like 8 or 9 months, which is really true. My husband jokes about this. Because I just like I get bored. And so it seemed at the time, to your point, that journalism would make that possible. Now the industry collapsed in ways that made that less possible for us. But I do think it was a like idealistic, it seemed like a good place. You know, the other job I interviewed for after graduation, I could go to grad school or I could get a job writing about KitchenAid mixers at Amazon. And I took the grad school job.
Shocking.
Yeah, but you know, sometimes I think about like if I had, you know, taken that Amazon job, I would have been in Amazon very early on. And my husband's like, you would never have stayed. Like, what are you talking about? You know, it was not to be. Even if you had.
And you ended up writing product reviews and making a bunch of money off of that anyway.
Totally.
So you got to do it.
Totally. I did get to do it.
For a little bit.
Exactly.
That is so funny. That is great. Well, I see this a lot, but I'd like to hear from your own perspective. Where do you find yourself connecting the dots the most?
I think for me, I'm really obsessed with people's patterning. And so what happened is when I became a coach, I started to have people come in and say, no, I want to make more money. I want to have more clients. They'd have these things they want. I want marketing to feel easier. And for me, my brain started to understand that that was sort of a surface level issue. And there was tons of stuff going on underneath. So at the moment, I'm really interested in connecting the dots on the ways all different modalities, like from psychology to somatics to spiritual practices to like very linear practices, can all contribute to getting people sort of unstuck at the root cause. I mean, probably similar to you, I have really strong pattern recognition. And so as I work, I think it's maybe something that a lot of multi-passionate people have, like we're almost like able to back out of it a little bit and see what's going on and connect something that other people might not be able to. And so for me, like I'm running a money program right now that is really unique because it's really combining like all these different modalities. And to me, that's very interesting to my brain, but it's all in service of sort of unlocking people from the cages they think they're in. And then I get all obsessed with all the dots that are connected sort of more broadly as to how the systems have created these stuck spots that that we're in and how our power is connected to that. So that's a long answer to the question of like, a lot of it is actually people's personal journeys where I'm most interested in connecting the dots across many different disciplines.
Yeah. You said the word that was coming to mind with me, which was systems and systems thinking. So if you need a new rabbit hole to go down, I'll send you a link to a page. We'll put it in the show notes. So for folks, make sure you grab your water or whatever drink you have, because that's my thing in the podcast, throwing it in the show notes. And it's the Water Center for Systems Thinking that I got involved with when I was in Tucson, Arizona. And so we were doing a STEM conference, but we wanted to challenge the norms around STEM education. And so I had heard about this kind of systems thinking training that they were doing. And it was originally in classrooms, but then they've expanded it and they're talking to business leaders and all this sort of stuff. And they have these cards that are the habits of a systems thinker that I think you would really enjoy. They almost like tarot cards, but they have pictures on them and they talk about things that people who use a systems thinking perspective are really good at. So looking at causes and effects, looking at things that have short-term responses and things that have long-term responses, and all these different things of just really thinking about everything, whether it's how a person's life has evolved, whether it is the problems in the world right now, and taking that systems perspective, which allows you to see a big picture, but also get into the nitty-gritty details. Because when they talk about like, are you a big picture person or are you a details person? I'm like, I fly between those. Like, I'm not stuck in one of those things. There's value in digging into a very specific thing, but then there's excellent value in finding the golden thread or seeing those big picture things as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I did a personality test. I had somebody who's going to work with me who is a neuroscience PhD. And so she does these personality assessments. And mine scored very high on openness, which is very much like big picture thinking, but also really high on practicality. And so I think it's what you're talking about. It's the range of like, I can help you with this tiny thing, but I'm also thinking about what does that mean for all the women who are in my spaces having this exact thing and why do we have it, right? I mean, World Builders is designed, the tagline is, as systems crumble, we build. And so there's a lot of thinking about what's going on here, big picture, why? Does this matter so much? And how can I help you on an individual level be able to step into seeing things and doing bigger work, I think, on a macro level? So I love that. I feel like I'm going to go get obsessed with it now.
Do it.
I mean, and that's, to be honest with you, Sarah, that was always my problem at jobs, was I couldn't just put my head down and do the thing. Like, that was a complaint I would get from bosses. I would be like, but we're going in the wrong direction. Like, I don't understand, you know? So as an entrepreneur, I actually think that's come in handy, right? You and I both have that where we can zoom out and we're allowed to do so. And it actually helps course correct maybe before we go into the wrong place.
Do you find when it comes to your own career, though, that you need somebody else to help you with that process? Because I know you've used coaches in your life as well.
Totally, 100%. I always have a coach I'm working with. And I pick them very specifically for the eras that I'm in, right? So right now, the woman I'm working with is less, I mean, she's a strategist and she can help me with that, but I kind of got that part down. More, I need help with the nervous system patterning, the sort of intuitive work, the am I trusting myself? I need to delegate and hire people. How's my nervous system feeling about asking for help, right? So I very specifically pick people who I think can kind of call me out, because I don't think we can always see that in ourselves.
Yeah.
No, we want to. Yeah.
And we teach what we struggled with ourselves as well. You say that all the time. And that's why that'll lead perfectly into the next question, which is a thing I've struggled with. I'd love to know, through the different eras, what strategy have you used to explain your complexity without overwhelming people, but also without feeling like you're losing an important part of yourself, which might be the fact that you are complex.
Yeah, I think it's about proving, right? So when I was earlier in my career and I would make a shift, I would feel like I needed to explain myself because I needed to prove that I was allowed to change, or that I was allowed to be bigger, or that I was, right? Like, I was trying to make people like me, for lack of better terms. Like, I wanted them to say, oh, Jenny, that makes so much sense. And that's so great. And I get it now. And I was saying to my coach actually a couple days ago, like, my businesses in the past, a lot of them have been built for people to like me, for me to make sense. And I'm actually stepping into an era where I don't think that's as possible. Like, what I'm doing now is very It's just so different. I'm not even sure I know how to put words to it yet, but it's like, I don't need to prove myself. This is an incredible ecosystem I'm building. It's necessary. I, for whatever reason, that has finally fallen off the back. I don't feel like I need to explain. Now, I have been sharing, right? As an invitation to come along as the complexity grows yet again. But I think it's coming from this place of not needing, like, I like myself now and I accept myself now. And so that's what I mean when I say there's like root cause stuff that kind of goes underneath it. I mean, there's also a practical element to this too that I know you and I have talked about a lot of like, but how do I make it make sense, right? So
yeah, I still have to have a byline. I still have to write a bio.
Totally. And so I think there is something to bridging, especially when you're expanding identities. So this has happened to me a lot, right? Like I'm a journalist. Okay, now I'm a freelancer. Okay, I'm a freelancer. Okay, now I opened an agency. Okay, I opened an agency. Now I'm a coach. Okay, I'm a coach and now I'm a vet, right? And so what I often try to do is sort of bridge people from one space to another with intention. So I might leave that part on my bio, right? Like I might leave that I'm the author of The Sustainable Solopreneur and the founder of that body of work in my bio. I'm not just going to like ditch it because it helps people understand the evolution. And I often create programs and pieces of writing. How do I want to say this? That like still talk to the group of people who was with me in the previous era. So like my Create program right now is a really good example of this where it still is a tactical business building program. It's kind of from the old era of my work, but there are parts of it that have intuition and, you know, visualization work that kind of bridge into the new world builders body of work. So I am thinking about it almost in like a relationship sense, if that makes sense, of like making it clear, this is what I'm doing. And like, do you want to come? But always keeping it as an option. But I'm not trying to make people like me anymore. Like, I just think it's a zero sum game. I don't think I'm ever going to make sense to people, Sarah. Like,
yeah, we're too much. That's what I have in my LinkedIn about section is, you know, I'm too much for some people and that's okay.
Totally. And I think it's taken me so long to get to that of just like someone said to me the other day, like, it's just so wild that you're so fast. And I was like, okay. You know, I think previously I would have said like, well, and then and I like have trained and so that's why I'm so fast, whatever.
Apologize.
Just like, no, I am very fast. That's just true. And if that intimidates you, that is your stuff, you know? And like, I don't know what else to say about that. So, but it has taken me so much work to be safe saying that. And I think I've watched you do this exact same work of like, this is how I am. And I'm great. And me having all these things makes me very good at what I do. But I've had to build something very special to work for my brain. I can't have a business that looks like everybody else's and be fully expressed, right?
And I think that another thing you've talked about both in a program, which I'm participating in now, which is about thinking about wealth in a different way.
Yeah.
But also in some of the other work that you've talked about, which is a level of magnetism that I think comes about when you become more confident in yourself and stop apologizing for the complexity, because other people want that confidence. Like that has been when I've had career coaching clients, when I did my Renaissance readers and we read the book Range, that's the number one thing people tell me that I am able to provide them is increased confidence in their value as Renaissance people.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Because the world has been telling them, you're too much, you're overwhelming me. For me, it was, you're the teacher's pet because you want to be friends and you want to please the teacher, which, okay, there's problems with the teacher's pet side of things, but there's also the fact that I liked my teachers and they were interesting people and they're older than me and they know more than me, so I want to learn from them.
Yeah. And you love learning, right? I mean, yeah. I think that it's exactly right that people who are free are very magnetic. And I talk a lot about being internally referenced versus externally referenced, right? So internally referenced is, well, we'll do externally referenced first because that's the easiest one for all of us to understand. Everybody says I'm doing a good job, right? That's what we were trained to do in school. It's getting good grades. It's making the money. It's being very visibly accepted. That's being externally referenced. The problem with that, and like, yes, we need relationships and yes, we need community. But the problem with that is that it's not within your control. Other people are then determining if you're safe or not. Versus being internally referenced is, I know who I am. I'm doing what I'm doing on purpose. And I've done the work to like myself. And that is so stable and solid that I think it's super magnetic. People will say to me like, I don't know what's going on with you, but I think I want it. Because it's like a feeling, you know? It's a feeling of stability. And I want to say very loudly, like, I was not this way right? Like, I was the oldest daughter. I was the straight A student. I was like the overachiever. We both were, right?
Right here.
So, like, it's taken me a long time to learn how to be safe with myself and very sure of myself, I think, not second guess my decisions. Like, I've got my own back now, right? And so you're exactly right. It's just very magnetic. And especially now, there's just something going on now where I keep saying to people, we're like birds in a cage and we've realized the door's open, but we don't even know what's out there and we don't know if we can fly and we don't know how to jump out. And so people are kind of like looking. And I think those of us who are multi-passionate just knew this like 5 years ago and we're already out. And so there is a magnetism to like, wait, is there more choice? Wait, can I be more fully expressed? Wait, can I be weirder? You know, we're out of the cage. We always knew the door wasn't locked anyway.
Yeah. And I think, like, having seen you go through all of your evolutions, I think what I saw was your confidence in yourself grew in chunks. Mm-hmm. So when some chunk of you became confident, then the magnetism towards that side of you is what drew people in. So when you were confident as a freelancer about setting the rates, about challenging people who paid you late, about all those different things, then people who wanted to freelance or who were freelancers were drawn to that aspect of, oh, this part of her life she's confident about, even if she's not confident about the other parts.
Yeah.
And then as time has gone on, more and more of you has come into alignment and the confidence has grown with more and more of you, even though you've always been very open about, yeah, there's still parts of me though that aren't 100% confident and
totally.
They don't have to ever be.
It's like a forever evolution, you know? I mean, it's a life's work, but I think you're right. What's interesting about my career, and I even sent a Substack about it today, is like there's very clear iterations, right? There's like the freelancer era and there's the agency era and there's the coaching era and there's the book author era. And now this is another one of more of a visionary and a CEO, but you're right, it has come in chunks. And I will also say, I think that's something to pat myself on the back that I've done well is naming the eras for myself. And that helps people understand where I'm going to the point of like wanting it to make sense for people.
Yeah.
I think I have often tried to be very clear about naming where I'm going. And that means not everybody's coming, right? Me saying, okay, I'm stepping into being more of a visionary, more of a CEO. Like this is a bigger thing. I'm talking more about energetics and spirituality plus all the practical things. Not everybody's going to love that. But at least I feel like I'm not dragging people around with me who don't want to be there, right? Like there is this element of there's kind of a natural ebb and flow of who's coming with for each era. But if I can give advice to anybody listening, I think naming the identities you're stepping into has been very helpful for me as a multi-passionate person. So I feel like there's some grounding in like where I'm going, right? At least for me.
And you're a trained storyteller.
Yeah.
And you know that that's an element of telling stories. There's some aspect of the super complex story that you have to simplify so people can follow you from point A to B to C to wherever you go.
Exactly.
And without some structure to your story, they get lost.
Totally. I feel like this is what you and I have gotten to work on a lot too with your story is like, it's not dumbing us down, but it is in some way using narrative to invite people into a conversation. And I think when we've been told that we have to stay small, like any kind of structure feels like a trap at first, but there's nuance there, right? Of like, okay, I can provide a little structure to this so people actually know that I'm the person who helps them with fill in the blank, even if that thing you're helping them with is changing all the time, right?
Yeah. And my thing with the topic of niching down actually aligns really well with another question that I can't stand, which is when we asked kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the singular, like you're going to grow up and you're going to become this singular thing. And I just commented on something that was like the trending topic on LinkedIn, which is about how college sophomores are now having to specialize what they do in the summer for the career they want. They're trying to get 16-year-olds to specialize for the career that they're going to have, which one, it doesn't make sense. So many of the jobs don't even exist right now that the kids who are 16 will have.
Totally.
And it's not a singular because your career, like I talk about, is a journey with multiple stops and you don't have to go one place and stay there forever. You go to all these places and you learn something there and then you take it with you to the next place and then you make it even more fun and more exciting. And so that idea of like niche implies one spot and you're just going to get even more and more specialized. And that's not where it's at.
I know.
And that's not who's going to think outside the box, because they're completely trapped inside the box. They're not the ones who are going to be innovative. No. And whether you want to talk about scientific research on that innovation, or you want to talk about spirituality and people who are open to ideas,
right,
everybody's saying that's not where it's coming from.
Totally. I think a lot about, I'm going to get the stat wrong, but there's something about how our parents' generation, typically like 70, 80% of them had one career. Mm-hmm. Our generation, we will have 5 to 6. And I just think it's like when I sometimes try to explain what I'm doing to my parents and they look at me like I have 7 heads. I can only imagine what our children are going to be doing, right? But the path is not that linear anymore, nor does it serve us for it to be. I end up working with a lot of people who have sort of like latched their whole identity to one career. With journalism, that's a big one, but there are a lot of other sort of like identity latches. And to be honest, it's like miserable. You know, I don't know that it serves us in any way. It does feel like a shortcut to meaning, I think, for some people at the start of like, oh, okay, it's like journalism conveys a certain way of moving in the world. And so you want that identity archetype. But over time, it means you can't leave, because then you don't know who you are.
Yeah.
So what we're talking about is like, instead of, you know, I like to ask my kids, instead of what do you want to be when you grow up, I ask them, how do you want to be when you grow up? Like, what things are interesting to you? You know, like, it's more about that self, again, the self-directed knowledge, right? And the self-referencing.
Yeah. My 6-year-old regularly now tells me, she's like, I'm a Renaissance girl.
Love.
And I like all the things, and I'm going to do all the things. I'm going to grow up and I'm going to be a meteorologist and a dancer and a Care Bear. And I'm like, you go, girl.
Yes, you are. You, love.
Yes, you are. You are going to do all those things and more.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My kids go to a Montessori school, a charter school. So it's Montessori upper grades. And I think I also actually went to a Montessori school early through kindergarten. And the whole premise is like, chase what lights you up, right? Like, whatever you're curious about is what you get to learn. And it's very interesting to watch my 6-year-old, because he just has no, he just learns about whatever's interesting to him. He's going to be like us. Of course he is. There's no way he won't be, right? It's like, that's how his brain is being trained to move in the world. And I mean, it's part of why I'm setting up World Builders the way I am, because we need more visionaries. Like, we do need people who are seeing outside of what exists right now, because what exists right now is quite broken.
And in particular with AI taking more and more of the thinking out of the hands of the people, mm-hmm. Not to say I'm all anti-AI. There is a place for it. It can help with mundane tasks and all that sort of stuff. It's great for weather forecasting, but in a different way. It's not a good forecaster, but it's a good model. But people who can think outside the box, who can connect the dots, who can draw from an undergraduate degree, a minor in Italian and psychology and a master's degree in journalism and be into spirituality and can draw from all those things and see those connections. AI is never going to be able to do that, because all it does is regurgitate what's been done before.
Already exists. Exactly.
Yeah.
What I'm so obsessed with right now, Sarah, is like neurodivergent brains, multi-passionate brains, creative brains, cyclical brains. Like, we are built for this. I remember thinking, someone tried to talk to me about investing in like financial systems that were really rigid. And I was like, I do not understand. Like, my brain literally doesn't get that. And I used to think it was because my brain was broken. Turns out, I think I just could see that that wasn't going to get me where I wanted to go. And I would say things like, well, but why are we just hoarding money? Why don't we just have an elder care system? You know, and people would look like at me like I had 7 heads. And it's like, no, like, do you understand, right? So I think a lot of us have been sitting there wondering, am I broken? And I feel inclined to say the system is broken and your brain is actually very well equipped to think of something completely new and imaginative and profoundly different, which we really need right now. We really, really need it.
How do we get people like ourselves, who were the high achieving, oftentimes firstborn daughters, A+ students, to get comfortable with the failure that needs to happen when you move into this more experimental, trying new things, not everything is going to work out type of setting? Like, how do you get their nervous system response to not just stop them from doing it?
Such a good question. I have so many thoughts. I mean, it's partially nervous system. It's also why I've gotten obsessed with intuition as a teaching tool, because when I talk about intuition, I'm really talking about sourcing information from this like subconscious creative part of your brain before you immediately go into strategy. Because I think brains like ours were really good at trying to put it in order and make it make sense for everybody. And so we almost skip all the creativity and the juiciness and get right into the, like, we squeeze the life out of the thing is often how I describe it. it, right? We just like get way too rational about it way too quick. And then we spin and we spiral and we're super anxious, which is a lot of wasted energy, to be honest, right? So I think for me, when I started getting introduced to intuition, which however you want to just like understand that, some people would say it's God, some people would say it's your wise self, some people would just say it's like quieting down enough to listen to what you actually want. It sort of changes your relationship to self-judgment is what I would say. It's why I'm so interested in it, because it turns on this imagination part of your brain. You've done visualizations with me, right? It's like you see things and then you make decisions in a different way where I think you're more sure, but also you have less of a grip on it. And I'm not sure I completely understand why that happens yet. It definitely has to do with the way you're talking to yourself, where that information is coming from. It comes from this like place of childlike trust that I think we struggle to produce as adults. And it stops us from overanalyzing to a certain extent. So I will say I'm doing this right now with the Create program, which is an 8-week program where people build new parts of their businesses and people are launching offers. And this thing is happening where they're like, but it's not perfect enough yet. And what if people don't like it? And what if whatever? Because it's kind of like, I mean, a lot of the offers are like way out of the box, right? Like totally wild. And so I think at least it came in from an imaginative place. And so they're almost like not even able to fit it into anything they know. So they can't even judge it in the same way. But that's where the nervous system work comes in. It's called autonomic toning, right? So how do you get your brain used to the fact that there could be safety in iterative exploration? There could be safety, and that's the internal safety stuff, right? But your body will have a response. Like people's bodies respond as if they are dying sometimes. they're not, right? And so that's tapping and walking and jumping and dancing and moving your body and talking to another person. And like there's this whole toolkit. So I know that's a long-winded way of saying, like, I think we almost have to come through the side door to come up with the ideas and then put them in an entirely different category and then take care of our bodies as we're trying to put it into the world.
Yeah. I liked when you asked us a few weeks ago about where do you find your inspiration? And it's like in the shower. And for me, I said when I'm walking my dog. And then literally that afternoon, I'm walking my dog and I came up with my next idea cued for thought, which is going to be a podcast playlist that I'm queuing together where I'm taking 3-4 podcasts from different creators on different topics that all address the same underlying theme. And kind of like you were talking about, where you draw from all these different areas, you look for the kind of a golden thread, or what are these people saying that could be really applicable to these people?
Yep.
And it came to me while walking the dog, while I'm not sitting at my computer trying to type out a plan. It's when you free your mind that you get to have those ideas come in. And then a second tangent, because tangents are so much fun. One of my favorite things I read when I was in atmospheric and oceanic science as an undergraduate was a paper that our TA assigned to us. And what it was looking at meteorologists and who is most accurate in their forecasts. And if anyone says to me, if I could be paid to be as inaccurate as you are, I'm going to throw a pencil at them because that's the funniest joke I've never heard. But anyways, so they made a square and there was 4 different spots. So the x-axis was a younger, less experienced meteorologist, older, more experienced. And then the other was whether they relied more on the computer model or whether they relied more on intuition. Mm. And guess what? The older meteorologists who relied more on intuition to make the final call on their forecasts were more accurate than the ones who just relied on that computer model. And that really stuck out to me.
Yeah, it's wild and it doesn't surprise me, but I think our rational brains don't necessarily trust it. I have this a lot in my work where I get, you know, ache was like an intuitive download. The program came through. It was pretty fully baked. I was like, this seems like a lot for me to launch it right now, to stack it on top of my other program. Like, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to trust it. And my brain is like screaming at me. No one's going to sign up. This is so outlandish. You know, I have 62 people in there. It was a $10,000 launch. And so I'm starting to get proof to support that. But I think it's really important. I remind people a lot, your rational brain is not necessarily going to feel like you can trust this, which isn't because you can't. It's just because you don't have evidence that you can. Like, this is a really different way of making decisions and moving in the world, right? And so, at least for me, no one around me is doing it. No one in my family has ever done it, right? I just kind of feel delusional half the time. And yet, more people are being helped. My business is growing. I'm healthier, right? And I don't get stuck in the spin cycle as much. It's like, I do that. I go out on a walk. I get an idea. It's like, I just have to get out of my own way.
Yeah. We are our own biggest barricade.
I'm like, and I have people on my team now, right? So I just have to force myself to be like, Jenny, just give it to them. Like, go give it to them and they're going to upload it. Like, you have to stop futzing with it, which is a thing we do to try to protect ourselves, right? So that's why I'm so obsessed with this body of work. It frankly has nothing to do with spirituality. It has to do with accessing parts of our brains that are just better at moving at a higher speed without cost to us and coming up with new ways, right? This is what I mean when I say I get obsessed with just kind of like, what's the quickest route to the thing? And intuition is a pretty quick route. So it's interesting, right? And if you told me 2 years ago I'd be doing this, I'd be like, what? Which is the beauty of the multi-passionate journey. I'm like, okay, surprise me. What's next?
Yep. Here we go.
Here we go.
Again. Yeah. One of my favorite books that I've read in the last like 5 years, which we'll put in the show notes, is Serendipity. I'll have to look up the correct title of it. But it's both the scientific side of serendipity and the more spiritual take on serendipity.
Love.
And I want to say that the author was a science journalist, but it's a really interesting thing because that concept of serendipity, like, does this thing magically come out of nowhere? Is it a higher power that caused it? Or can you also plant the seeds, to use that gardening metaphor, that end up leading to it? Not every seed comes up, but are some people more lucky, or are they in a way doing some of the work so that they can take advantage of luck when it strikes and when they see it?
I mean, I love the phrase, magic is focused intention. It's like that idea that yes, we get those downloads, right? Yes, we have these like flow states. I think our brains are just really primed to be that way. Us neurodivergents, multi-passionates, we're very creatively iterative, but you still have to do the action things, right? And so I think there's this magical combination for people who learn how to kind of get out of their own way and just like take a couple quick actions in that more iterative, experimental way that you talked about, that I see in my business coaching is probably like the number one determinant of people whose businesses change the fastest. It's willingness to listen and be a little still and get the idea, but also willingness to put it out there, right? And not hold it and futz with it. And that, again, is the stuff that's like us trying to protect ourselves, which we, most of us, were taught as kids. Someone described it to me the other day. You can't see me, but I'm putting two hands in front of my face. And it's like, we're pulling back one hand and then we're pulling back the other hand. And then you're like, oh, wait, now I can see. Like, we don't even realize that there's so much conditioning and protectiveness between us and the thing that we want. Like, that is my job, right? As a coach, is just kind of like, okay, peeling that one back and that one back and
that one.
We'll make it easier for you to get your good ideas in the world. It's not actually my job as a coach to come up with the ideas. And that's where I think coaches get into danger, which is a whole other rabbit hole. But like, you can't do it for people. You know, it has to come from them if it's going to work.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And they know their own story.
Right.
So you couldn't possibly come up with the idea because you don't have the lived experience that they've gone through that uniquely qualifies them to come up with and make the thing happen.
Yes, exactly. I have a client right now designing her business as a playground. It's like a community playground. And so she drew this picture and she's like, this part's the slide. And okay, this over here is where we're all having lunch at the table. And so each program is designed like the lunch table is like this small pod community thing. And the slide is something that's like very rapid. And so her brain is just like on fire. As she builds, there's no way I could build any of that. It exists within her and also is coming from this sort of childlike joy place, which then makes it super magnetic. So people want to sign up, right? But it has to come from inside of you. It has to come, I think, from the imagination, little kid joy side, which I just think those of us who are super curious never really lost. I have a friend whose kid always tells him he's a kid adult. And I'm like, that's exactly right. Like, you should see the way I run my business. I have like gel pens and a sketchbook and you know this, right? So it is very imaginative. It's fun and it's magnetic, to your point. Makes selling a whole freaking lot easier.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm going to let that transition us because I could talk, you know, for 2 hours with you.
Yes.
But I respect your time and I have to go pick up the kids anyways.
Yes.
So we're going to do our game because this podcast has to have a game and it's an improv game. And so you're going to be completing the sentence and I'll make myself go first.
Okay.
I was going to say this even before you said it, but you know you're a Renaissance person if is the sentence you're going to complete. And so mine is, you know you're a Renaissance person if you're described frequently as having a childlike sense of wonder, curiosity, or playfulness.
Yeah, you know you're a Renaissance person if you have a mile-long list of creative ideas that you haven't yet built.
It just keeps going on and on. Okay, should we do it again?
Yes, let's do it.
Should we do another one? Okay. You know you're a Renaissance person if in almost any conversation you have, you can find something to be curious about because you're really listening.
Yeah, you know you're a Renaissance person if you want to change your wardrobe or your hair color or your haircut at least every 3 months. Or take a trip or move or live somewhere different.
Something like that. Like, you're jealous of the character Tonks in Harry Potter, who can change her hair and her looks at will.
Yes.
She's my favorite character of all the female characters. Yep. Almost probably all the characters I love, because she can at will change herself.
I'm getting a sleeve tattoo in a couple of weeks, and it's partially like me stepping into this new identity. But one of my friends was like, well, who are you this time? Can you explain it to me? Right. Like, we're just doing it again. Maybe I'll have purple hair next time.
We're just going again.
Yeah.
I love it. Oh, and I forgot to mention something. So you have a podcast, and one of your very first guests on the podcast made me squeal with delight out loud, which was Lindsay McMillan.
Oh, yeah.
Because you were talking about when she was a child, and she specifically said that she wanted to be a Renaissance woman with that exact phrasing.
Totally.
And I was like,
I know. She talked about now how she like creates worlds in her fiction books that then they apply to her real life. And she's one of these people. Right? She's a career coach, but also a former Goldman Sachs VP, and also a fiction book author, and also a poet, and also, and also, and also, and also. And her big work has been like, I'm all of it. Right? So it is, I mean, your people are my people. You know that.
Yeah, they're so much fun. They're our community. Mm-hmm. And also, they are not limited. I've had people ask, they're like, oh, Renaissance woman, so this is just for women. It isn't limited to women. It isn't limited to women and non-binary people. There are Renaissance men out there, but I think it's the men who reject society's expectations of what masculinity is. It's the men who are comfortable enough inside themselves to talk about emotions, to be complex, that sort of thing. And that's perhaps fewer of the male population than it is of women and non-binary people. But if you are a man listening, you can also be part of this. You are not excluded. You and I both have wonderfully supportive husbands follow us on our whatever's next. They're like, okay, buckle up. Here we go.
My poor husband, I think he likes it. It makes his life so interesting. It's like,
yeah, that's what I like to think.
He's like, I've basically been married to like 12 different people. I just keep wondering what my next marriage will be. I'm like, bless you for staying. You know, and for me, honestly, having someone, he's so anchored. He is his same self every day, all the time. And like, bless that earth energy, because I would just like fire away to the sun if I could. And he keeps me chill. So maybe not chill, but anchored.
Yeah. Every year I say to my husband, on the Facebook I Love You announcement, it's you are my rock.
Yes, totally.
You're the steady, the thing that keeps me from flying off in the world, from completely getting discombobulated when I have a new idea. Because if it was just me all by myself, we might be in a little bit more trouble.
Totally, and we need it. Yeah. You know, the other thing I would say about the fact that I think a lot of this conversation about Renaissance people applies to women and non-binary people right now, because we're in this moment of like all this repression that has gone way back for, you know, all the women in my family lineage, super repressed, not fully expressed. Like, there's just a reclamation happening right now too. So I think that's why it's not exclusive of men, but there's just a lot of conversation for it with women right now, because at least in my coaching practice, there's a lot of us going like, wait, what I was given is maybe not the thing I would like to carry forward. Wait, you know, like for us, I want to be a present parent and run an ambitious business, but also not find myself doing either thing, right? Like, we're really pushing those boundaries of anything that has been possible before. So I just love that you're having this conversation, and it makes sense for right now. It makes a whole lot of sense. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, let's jump in then to our rapidish fire questions. Okay. I've got three questions for you. The first one, and you probably have a few to choose from. What is one metaphor that you find yourself using frequently at this iteration of Jenny?
Talk a lot about owl and squirrel energy when people are trying to understand the parts of themselves that are like that quiet intuitive voice versus the anxiety voice, because a lot of us don't know the difference. And so for me, I've used the metaphor a lot of like, I'm stepping into my owl energy. I'm stepping into that quiet and that wisdom and that listening, which is very different from the version of me that's been like really busy. She's more squirrel energy. She's like collecting the nuts, and we love her, and she did good work. But that metaphor, part of my sleeve tattoo, I'm getting an owl on it because it just really lands for me. That like whole energetic of an owl feels right for even how I'm like spending my time on my calendar, to be honest. Just like a little more time in quiet, a little more observation.
Yeah. And I think too, like even the physical characteristics of their heads.
Yes.
An owl's eyes are proportionally larger.
Yes.
So they can see more. Their ears might be either bigger, or they have the ability to swivel.
Right.
So far, their heads can swivel.
Yeah.
versus a squirrel who's kind of stuck. I love a good squirrel.
Yeah, owls are really fierce too, right? So they're scary sometimes. And so I think there's this element of me like owning my fierceness, but also that's the visionary thing, you know, making sure I'm seeing, making sure I'm asking important questions about like, do I want this business to work in this way just because I've seen everybody else do it this way? What am I going to do with the revenue? I mean, there's so many big questions that if I'm sort of going in squirrel mode, I'm not going to get the answers that I want.
Absolutely, yeah.
Or that are innovative or visionary. Yeah.
Yes, you're prepared for winter with food, but you're not looking
but I'm gripped.
Any season past winter.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, very good. Well, the next question that I wanted to ask is there another rabbit hole that you've gone down recently? A fun little, like, just totally got into it.
Yeah, I'm really obsessed with imagination. And so I've been looking into the science of imagination and sort of also working through why do visualizations work so well for my audience. So, you know, you've been in my programs and I often like, it's like a meditation, but I guide you into a scene. And so I've been learning a lot about theta brainwave states and the way your brain becomes really plastic when you're in those spaces and how it allows you to, it's like when you come back, you bring that with you. Sort of the brainwave state that we were in from 0 to 7. And so I've been listening to podcasts about imagination. You know, for me, it's like, yes, this is spiritual stuff. It can kind of seem woo-ish, but there's also a lot of science. And so I really feel like it's important to be able to explain the science to people as well as a bridge. So yeah, I'm just really obsessed with imagination and how imaginative we all were as kids. You know, your kids like create worlds every damn day. Yep. And so how do I teach adults to do that? You know? So it's a big rabbit hole for me lately.
Will you share a few favorite things and we'll put it in the show notes for others who want to check out that rabbit hole?
Yes, I'll send you a few favorite resources. Yeah, but I'm obsessed with the way that brain plasticity is very real, right? And what ways do we have to step into that more agile creative state is like fascinating to me.
Neuroscience is, meteorology is my favorite, but if I hadn't done that, neuroscience by far, I love that. And another thing we share, I love entomology, or what is it? Am I saying it wrong?
Etymology.
Yes.
Words.
I love the history of words. Mm-hmm. I'll put it in the show notes. Michigan Public Radio does a 5-minute show every Sunday and they have the podcast so you can stream it. It is just coming in explaining the history of words or phrases.
Oh, I'm obsessed. You know I love.
And that and Grammar Girl.
Yeah. I love root words. You know, so when you're fun. In my programs too, when you're in those visualizations, people get words or phrases. So usually I go in and pull the root word and I'm like, it's this. You know, it's like the whole wealth thing. The root of wealth is well-being, which is like, oh, okay. To me, that makes it all make so much more sense. So I'm obsessed. I also, you know, when I was doing journalism work, neuroscience was one of my beats. So
jealous.
I love this. I love it.
I'm friends with a lot of neuroscientists and I'm like, tell me about what you're studying.
Totally. I just want to know how the brain works, right? I just think it's fascinating. So I'm, deeply obsessed.
I think another, you know, you're a Renaissance person thing might be, you know, you're a Renaissance person if you at one point in time considered being a psychology major or minor, because I can promise you, I was thinking about it. I was looking at all the stuff I had to take and I decided on atmospheric and oceanic science because it was better for like finding a job in broadcast journalism, but I was this close to doing, I took as many psych classes as I could.
Yeah, I mean, I literally was. That was my major focus. Yeah. We love to know how the human brain works. And I think, you know, there's like endless information. There's also a lot of new information that's coming out around intuition and like energy work and what does that mean? So I just love kind of learning about that stuff. The telepathy tapes is a really, you know, interesting take where a journalist is looking at a lot of the intuitive work and asking like, what is the science that applies here? So it's so fun. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Well, last question, and then you can tell people how to continue to learn from you. So it is, what is some quick, unique thing from your background that might surprise people?
I was a competitive cheerleader in high school, which is really interesting, like Bring It On style. Like we won West Coast Nationals. We had boys on our team. I was a gymnast growing up. And so that one always surprises people because I don't think I come off as a cheerleader type, whatever that means. But it was very, our football team was very bad. So the boys on the football team joined the cheerleading squad and competed with us during the months. And so we were really good. And my gymnastics background meant I was like flipping around. And so a very finite era for me, but an era I had nonetheless. Would not repeat it, but you know, it was fun while it was, you know, curlers in the hair and like big bows and all the things.
You are the second Renaissance person who has a background in gymnastics that has been on the show. One of my science communicator people, her background was in gymnastics. She was doing trampoline. So I was you need to make like a physics of trampoline YouTube video that I can watch the next time Summer Olympics roll around.
I love it. The trampoline people are always like very like that's it's so cool.
It's so neat. And I wonder, like, the Winter Olympics just got over, but I wonder whether, like, some of the ski jumpers do trampoline training for some of the spins. They have to.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
How else do you practice spinning like that and not, like, hurt yourself?
I love that. Yeah. I mean, I do think the, like, athletics mindset, like, a lot of the people I work with have some background in athletics, and it makes us good entrepreneurs to some degree because we're a little competitive. You know, we, like, kind of like to win things, so...
Yeah, and we also know how to overcome challenges and setbacks, and we think of things as like strengthening a muscle.
Totally.
Like Carol Dweck's work.
Totally.
Is I'll get better if I practice. Yeah. And same thing, we have a lot of musicians because we've been taught practice this and practice doesn't make perfect, but you do improve over time if you practice.
Totally. So. Yeah, I absolutely agree. It was good. The cheerleading was good training for me.
There you go. Go team. Well, I'm going to finally just let you tell people where are the best spaces to follow you right now. We're not promising that if you listen to this 8 months from now that it's going to be the case, but for now.
Great caveat. So, the World Builders website, www.theworldbuilders.co. That is probably the best place to find what is happening next for World Builders. You can also just follow me on LinkedIn. I think that is a great place for that. Just Jenny Gritters on LinkedIn. And then I also have a podcast called The World Builders where I'm interviewing people who are visionaries and asking them very specific questions about the worlds they're building, the value systems they have, and how they're doing it, which is the part I really want to know. And it's very cross-modality. So I just talked to a movement instructor. I have somebody who works in the voting space, somebody who works in medicine coming up. So it's very cross-modality, which I'm loving as well. So those episodes drop every Wednesday. And then you can also find me on Substack. I decided I'm going to hang out there. The Substack is called The World She's Building. So I'll give you all these links. But that one is very me. It's like very behind the scenes blog style of what I'm doing and why, because I missed having a place to share something like that. So
it's kind of nice. Yeah.
I was like, all my people are going to love this. I'm just literally going to show up and tell you what I'm working on that week and what I'm learning. So yeah.
Yeah. That's perfect. Yep. Well, thank you so much, Jenny, for taking the time to do this. I appreciate it. And I will see you probably at the clearing, which is another thing that I'll put in the show notes that Jenny has available, because you believe very much, as I do, in having free opportunities to support people, because we are just as much driven by our care for other people and wanting to make the world a better place as we are by any sort of like business acumen, ROI, that sort of thing.
Just not about that anymore, is it?
No.
We do need to make money and we do need to have recourse, but like it's about the people. It always will be. So thank you, Sarah. This is such a delight. Yeah.
Thank you.
This podcast has been such a long time coming. It's just so fun to actually be on here. What a full circle moment. I'm delighted.
Finally here. Thank you, Jenny. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
Connecting the dots with the Renaissance people.